670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Falcons have brought in another kicker and have signed him to the practice squad. Doesn't mean, again, that he is going to be the starter or kicking in Minnesota on
Release Watch is on
Sunday night. But they're not clowning around. And look, this is what it should be, but Parker Romo was in camp with the Patriots, and Mike, they signed him to the practice squad.
Yeah, man, a PTC lad, went to McIntosh High School and eventually, you know, makes his way to the NFL. We'll see where it goes. We saw the 49ers ditch their kicker. We'll talk more about that coming up in 4th and 1 after he didn't do his job. By the way, had to laugh today when my neighbor Kirby, who's a retired FAA, Carl, came to pick up the dogs to watch him for us today. He goes, man, Carl, giving it to Koo yesterday. He goes, and it's just funny. He goes, man, he got to lay off Koo. I said, well, he didn't do his job, Kirby. He goes, yeah, I guess he's right. No balls. It's just so funny to hear my neighbor who's in his 60s go, Carl's right, no balls. You missed it yesterday.
Kirby, thanks, man. Listen, we're all frustrated because we don't want things holding us back. Right. This is holding us back from living up to our potential.
And I said it yesterday. I wasn't trying to, you know, get you know, I know there's a couple of levels to this, but I stand by my comments. They had all summer yesterday to get this right. So there's an organizational issue. There's certainly an issue with the kicker. And, you know, now we'll see if whoever they're bringing in. Now, again, guy just said to me, what happened to Lenny Creek? Well, exactly. Lenny Creek really wasn't a legitimate competition.
Developmental. That's what they've said.
And our buddy, Big Low Country, was hitting us up on Twitter.
What's up, Low?
And I said, that's when I joked around. But, and I said, because I get it, not everybody speaks our shorthand. I said a public relations stunt because of the building of the brand internationally and trying to develop international players. That's all fine and good, but is he a legitimate kicker who can battle a kicker who didn't do his job and cost us games in the offseason? The answer was no.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll see where this goes, but at least they brought somebody in. And again, as I told the guys today, if I was the Falcons, as soon as Parker Romo got there, it would have been, hey, let me introduce you to everybody. Hey, cool, this is Parker Romo. First thing, right? Let's get this thing underway. Let's not clown around. We got to get this right. And for Falcon fans who are out there going, it's not a big deal, until you lose another game because your field goal kicker couldn't come through for you.
Right. And look, we'll ask Coach if something does break, if Romo aces an audition, no way to simulate game conditions, obviously, but he's trying to pay to, you know, get himself back in the league. We'll see. Will they close? Who got cut by the 49ers? Mooney?
Yes, they waived Jake Moody.
Moody. I said Mooney. Moody, I don't know if they bring him in later in the week, because you guys know it's a revolving door of guys that are either just got signed or just got cut. That's how the kicker's world works, right?
It does.
That's how Prater found his way to the Bills on a Friday after Bass went out for them. So all I know is you've got to, and we'll ask Coach, and I don't know if we'll get the answer, but, I mean, they have got to get this straight, because every other game we play in, Carl brought up a great point yesterday, the Chiefs, every freaking game they were in was one possession or less.
It's tough.
It matters.
It does. 404-726-0929. He said after the game last night, his first career win, I just can't wait to go to war next week. That's what J.J. McCarthy said.
Against us.
Next week is Sunday night.
Yeah.
Let's get to 4th and 1. Look, I'm going to stand on it now, and I'll stand on it regardless of the results on Sunday. Our guy's better. Michael Penix threw for 300 yards, 42 times. He didn't look stunted, afraid. He didn't look like he didn't know where he was going with the ball. All quarterbacks have errant throws. He's going to do that. But when you talk about him being ready from the first time we saw him, and this was game 4 for Penix, until Sunday, guys, he looks the part. Mike said it yesterday. If there's one thing you can believe in, you can believe we got a quarterback. Now, I think he's better than the guy last night in J.J. McCarthy,
right,
who looked lost to me. And by the way, when you're 7 for 12 with 56 yards and a pick 6 through 3 quarters, you look lost. They gave him confidence, the Bears, by allowing him, Mike, to slowly work his way back into this game. And then you said it. At the end of the night, they get the dub. But the Vikings are a good team, and they were a good team before JJ took over, okay?
Right.
Now our challenge is, can defensively, we challenge them down the field, Mike, make some explosive plays, run the football against this very tough Vikings defense. As we talk about last night, here was the pick six I was talking about for McCarthy.
Wants the snap, gets it. Full house blitz, throwing out to the left, it's picked up, down the sideline right, to the 40-yard line. He is history, baby! Leaving the Vikings, the taillights into the end zone for the touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. And a pick six for Deshaun Wright.
Now, that was a rookie mistake because it was a zero blitz. They brought everybody. You know what he did? I got to get rid of it. And he threw it out there. And the corner was like, thank you very much. Mike, are we going to challenge this kid like that? Because this is his second start.
Do we have the horses to do it? I mean, are we going to sell it out like that? I'd like to. You know, I think most Falcon fans have said over the years, no matter who the DC is, I'd rather die with blitzes than getting caught up in the zone.
I know
the zone is, I mean, sometimes a cover two or three can look like a prevent defense. It isn't. It just requires more pressure from your down linemen. We did not get the pressure. I know, guys, we'll talk to Arch about it here in about 15 minutes, but we just never got home. Close doesn't count. I know I'm not going to say hand grenades and horseshoes. It's just bull. You got to get Baker Mayfield on the ground. Get this guy on the ground. Shake things up. Pressure's got to come from the down lineman. Otherwise, you know, he can carve you up like any of. He's getting better, and he's got confidence from what he did in the fourth quarter. So in the locker room, you and I talked about it, man. The worst thing you could have had happen is the way this game ended for the Vikings for us.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connell said at halftime, he looked him in the face and said, you're going to win the game for us. And he said the kid lit up, like, because he was lost. Guys, he was like, I don't know if I'm doing the right things. And all of a sudden, you come out in the second half, and he's got a great coach. Let's be honest. Here is McCarthy. This was the play that I thought set him off to Justin Jefferson. And Jefferson's one of these guys. You just throw it out there, right? Guys, he's a tough cover. I don't care if it's AJ, if it's Mike Hughes. We need to make sure we know where this guy is. They torched us last season. It was almost an embarrassment as the secondary lost communication. Here's the touchdown last night to Justin Jefferson.
Third down and five. Good protection over the middle. It's caught for a touchdown. You're going to see two receivers kind of in the same area, about 5 yards separation with Justin Jefferson trailing Naylor. That's not good separation between those as far as a quarterback being able to see where to go with the ball.
J.J. still threw it in there. And again, yeah. Justin Jefferson made the play. That's Troy Aikman, obviously, on the call as he's describing what, from a quarterback standpoint, what he was seeing there. But the Vikings win. And they're 1-0. We're 0-1. I said to Mike, I don't want to start 0-2. It's tough to start dragging your way out of these 0-2, 0-3 situations.
And we know it's Carolina, the Commanders, a bye in the Bills. I mean, it's a tough five-game sled, even though maybe you don't respect Carolina, even though they looked a little sluggish. They beat us last year. Touchdown, 60-yard drive, 50-yard drive, 68-yard drive, three touchdowns in a quarter for a guy, in all instances, as a rookie, because he never got to play last year, other than preseason.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So McCarthy's feeling pretty good about himself. You know that Brian Flores, look, we love what we've got in Penix Jr., but you know, you said, Brian Flores will dial up exotic looks, things that a young quarterback hasn't seen yet. And how does Michael Penix respond? The best way to beat that is to establish our run game. Can we do that with Elijah Wilkinson on the right side?
It's going to be one of the big questions heading into Sunday night. It's Dukes and Bell, 4th and 1, brought to you by our friends at Priority Men's Medical Centers. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. Let's talk about other things going on around the league. Derrick Henry took the blame in the Buffalo loss. Ravens this week, don't know if you've looked, but we're into these kinds of things. They're a 12.5-point favorite. That's a lot. I don't care who you're playing. And I think they feel like the Ravens are going to be PO'd and go out and destroy a potential Cleveland team, Mike, that struggled last week. Here is Derrick Henry taking the blame.
Well, first of all, I got to take care of the ball. I told my teammates after the game, put the boss on me. I own it like a man. We emphasize taking care of the ball since we got back. It's a big emphasis, especially in our room at running back, taking care of the football, keeping it high and tight. Not like lackadaisical, and they made a play, but you know, man, I put his boss on me.
Put the loss on me. And he had a monster game in that loss to Buffalo. So we'll see how the Ravens bounce back because, again, we're talking 0-2 with a team a lot of people have going to the Super Bowl. So
yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that he had enough yards before he fumbled, man. I won that fantasy league by 1 week. Man, no, Day-Day, I was sweating, man. I went to bed. They were up by 2 scores. I said it yesterday. I wake up like, what? And the first thing I jump on is my fail. Won by 1.2 points in a Yahoo league, man. But anyway, but Derrick Henry will shake that up. But it still goes back to the clutch gene. And you and I have joked around about it. No, you're never going to have you may have a perfect game. There's been teams that have done it. But it's almost like Lamar and company have to be perfect to beat the Chiefs and beat Buffalo.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, man, Brian Daboll says Russ is going to be the starter in week two. People are already clamoring for Jackson Dart.
Did you see the trick play they dialed up on a first and goal where Russell just gets blown up and they do a naked boot?
He was not good, by the way.
Dable's a pretty good offensive mind, and I saw some of the stuff they did against the Commanders. I'm like, oof, you're making it easy for Dan Quinn's guys.
No doubt. Here's Dable talking about the starter in New York.
Do you intend to start Russell Wilson this week?
Yes. It's a tough game. Again, like I said yesterday, that game just doesn't fall on Russell Wilson. We got to do a better job collectively. Coaching, playing, but Russ will be the starter.
You know it. I know it. New York media knows it. Giants fans know it. Eventually, it's going to be Jackson Dart. But again, why do coaches do – well, Russell – see, that's the thing. It's one thing if it was Gardner Minshew, you know, or Joe Flacco was starting in New York. But Russell still has cachet. But does he? Is he the brand that we thought he was?
No, I think he's washed.
So that's the thing. So the beating of the drum for Jackson Dart's going to get louder and louder. But that's the thing. You've seen it before in other teams. Everybody's going to want to see the new kid in there, the new kid in town. And he's apparently looked pretty darn good in camp. We'll see.
One of the better games we got in week one. Week one was great, by the way. I mean, NFL fans, like, we got a great game. Sucked we lost, but we should have won. But all around the league, we had some really good games. That Jets game and Pittsburgh game was unbelievable. 34-32. And for those who didn't see this game.
Because you and I were at Mercedes-Benz. I didn't see it.
It was, look, and you know, for Aaron Rodgers, 4 touchdowns. But give credit to Justin Fields, guys. He played really good in this game. And after the game, Aaron Glenn, his new head coach, was asked about this. And, Mike, I said to you all offseason, if they let him play, if they let him just be a guy who uses his legs and all the things – and he looked really good. Here's Aaron Glenn.
Well, guys, that's who he is. I mean, I think each one of you guys were dogging him all during preseason about what he can't do, and I think he just showed what he can do. So, and we're all going to say this, that, you know, there are some things that he could have done better, and obviously he's going to feel the same way. But, man, this is a step-by-step process, and we know that he's not done with his progression as far as getting better. So the only thing that we're looking at is, man, just continue to be efficient, continue to be yourself, and don't let any outside noise try to distract you from what you can be.
By the way, Mike, they ran the ball for 182 yards. They torched the Steelers running the football. That's going to help Justin a lot this season.
A lot of folks, fantasy experts, so-called experts, thought that Breece Hall was going to be diminishing returns. Well, not in week one. Took a 60-yard field goal to beat Justin Fields. Unfortunately, they were all the way back, you know, total prevent. He couldn't really get anything going on that final drive with just 45 seconds left.
Crazy, crazy week. Week two is here, guys. We're talking about it tomorrow. We're at Flowery Branch. We will have Coach on. And our player guest as well tomorrow up at Flowery Branch.
We got the best engineer in the business. I just mentioned Jackson Dart's the new kid in town.
And he brings it. He brings it.
Now, granted, if you saw the Eagles in concert, this is like watching the Hall of Presidents at Disney World. Not a lot of movement on stage, Carl.
Not at this point. At one point, they were a great show. I agree with you. At one point, they were a great show. I like the Eagles. You don't like the Eagles?
Well, I mean, they always, as Don Henley said, they're often accused of loitering on stage.
Hey, man, we're coming back. We're going to get the thoughts of our own Dave Archer. A little bit of week one, but what do we got to do week two? Arch is the analyst for Atlanta Falcons, and he joins us next on Dukes and Bears.
670 The Score's Mullen Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullen Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Well, want to remind you to join Sports Radio 92.9 The Game for the most comprehensive coverage of Major League Baseball. Guys, it's brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Of course, from the Diamond with Grant McCauley at Sundays on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And this week's show is Saturday at noon from the Diamond. But he's got you covered, and we've got you covered. All right, speaking of being covered, let's talk to our guy, Dave Archer, analyst for our Atlanta Falcons. Falcons, turn the page. We're getting ready for the Vikings. But before we do, Arch, we got to ask you your thoughts on the good and the bad of what you saw Sunday in our close loss to the Bucs. I was thoroughly impressed with Michael Penix, and I just want to start there because we all talked in the offseason about what we thought he might be, what he could do. Arch, the six rushes for 21 yards were critical, right? I mean, those that's something that I think kind of goes unspoken now because the game played out. But going into the game, we kept saying, oh, he's not a runner, he's not a runner. But he can when he needs to be.
Yeah, no question about it, Carl, and good to be on with you and Mike. Yeah, there were a lot of good things to like about Michael Penix's performance in the game. Came out gunning, hits the slant route to Bijan in an empty set for 10, and then two plays later, they're taking a shot play. He reads it out. It's not available, dumps it to Bijan, and Bijan blows the roof off the building. I know Mike spilled his beer and all sorts of stuff was happening during that sequence. So. And everybody else did, too. I spilled my beer up in the press box as well. So it was a fun start, and I thought that Michael did a really good job of navigating the fact that you were unable to run the football with any success at all. He took a lot of shots in the face. Todd Bowles can throw a lot of stuff at you from a defensive standpoint, and he did. And I thought that Penix stood in, took shots, delivered the football. I don't know that there was an idea that he was going to throw it 42 times in the first game. I'm okay with him throwing it 42 times because of the way he handled it, you know, and I think that, and then you talk about the impromptu stuff, his ability to get out of the pocket, create some things on his own, which we knew was a piece of the equation. Hoped we didn't have to use it too much, but hey, he dove into that pack of cards when he needed to at key moments of the game to help give us an opportunity to win the football game.
It is Dave Archer with us, guys, on the WaitFor.com hotline. We talk so much about Kyle Pitts, Arch. I thought Pitts was open a lot. I thought he was even open on that scramble for the touchdown. And I love the effort. I thought, you know, mentally he was in there. And do you feel, from a quarterback standpoint, that maybe obviously he's going to Drake a little too much there? Or you think Zach will get with him and say, look, we can get Pitts more involved earlier?
I think it's probably a combination of the both, Mike. I think there's an idea that, you know, Kyle stepped up. And Michael was one of the first guys to talk about, hey, we got KP the football. That was the first day of training camp, right? He knows how good a weapon Kyle Pitts can be. And Drake is a major part of what we do because we put him in the slot. We run him in some of those control routes where you're trying to extend drives for first downs. And so he's going to get a look. A lot of times coverage takes you a certain way. And I know fans will see, hey, wow, I looked over on the other side of the field and Kyle Pitts is wide open. Well, some of that has to do with the eyes of the quarterback drawing the coverage away from Kyle Pitts some. So he opens up maybe late in the route. And coverage takes you away from a certain area where Kyle may be. But I know Kyle was really good when they needed him to. He made some key plays, what, 7 grabs, 58 yards. He saved his best for Tampa over the last couple of seasons. He had 7 for 88 last year in game 1 and had 4 for 91 and 2 touchdowns against them down in Tampa. You guys remember. So he's been pretty good against Tampa over the last couple of last 3 games. I do know that he let Michael down on one play. They had a really good look, had good coverage. Bowles came after him. Kyle's running an over route. He stopped running. Michael threw him the ball to an open spot. It's going to be a monster play, and for some reason, Kyle stopped running. So there's still some things that have to happen in there that are some of his responsibility as well as far as making sure he's where he's supposed to be. But certainly, you're going to continue to get him the football, and whether you direct some of it away from Drake or not, that all remains to be seen. But I think coverage takes you certain ways, and that's where you distribute the ball.
Arch, what was your take on the Cordarrelle Hodge play? I thought he was impeded. I did not know when I first saw it. And we talked about it yesterday, but after someone sent me the footage, I said, oh, well, that could have easily been a pass interference. What did you think? Because if he keeps running, speaking of keeping running, is that a touchdown?
Well, first of all, let's put in perspective what your young quarterback did. You went ahead and teed him up with 11 seconds left, knowing you had no timeouts. And if the ball's completed inbounds in the field of play, you're not going to get another snap. So you just trusted your young quarterback to make the right decision and give the coaching credit for talking to him in his ear. I know Raheem was out on the field hollering at him saying, hey, remember where we are? Remember the timeout situation? So he handled the operation perfectly. Cordarrelle's not going to get jammed at the line of scrimmage in that situation because they don't need to. They have to defend the goal line. If he catches the ball in the field of play, like I said, game's over. So when he gets to the top of the route, the defender is allowed the space that he's in. And that's where it gets a little skewed, and you kind of argue whether was that illegal contact, was it pass interference. It looked like Jamel Dean maybe widened a little bit and maybe collision Cordarrelle as he got right to the goal line. It was a dime throw, no question, from Michael. He got impeded just a little bit. That's what kept him from getting to the football, or kind of slowed him down a little bit where he couldn't get there. So the procedure from a Falcon perspective was right. We may have not gotten the call we should have gotten there. But, hey, guys, we got a lot of calls down the stretch in this game that kept us in play.
Never seen the refs give us 3 out of 4, Carl. And I were talking about that yesterday. Arch is heading to the land of 10,000 lakes, don't you know, with Wes on Sunday. You'll have the broadcast right here on 92.9 The Game. I thought the defense, we were so excited about the additions of Jalen Walker, Leonard Floyd as a free agent, of course, Pierce. They were close, Arch, and Caden Ellis had Baker wrapped up. They just never got home.
Well, Mike, you got to look at that. And yes, did they get him on the ground? No, they did not get him on the ground. And I know that's what the fan sees, but the effect of the passer, this is an offense, guys, that averaged 400 yards a game last year. It's the only offense was in the top five, both rushing and defense, and rushing and passing a year ago. You held them to 260 yards of offense. They, without Baker Mayfield's, 30 yards of scrambling, 39 yards of scrambling. They had 62 yards rushing. This is a team that averaged 150 yards on the ground last year. So as much as we're bemoaning the fact that we didn't get the quarterback on the ground, you forced him off his spot. Those five runs are not designed runs by Baker Mayfield. And you've got to fix that. You've got to make sure that the quarterback isn't going to get out, because guess what? The guy you see this week is going to be able to do that. Bryce Young can do that a little bit. We know Jalen Daniels can do that. And, oh, by the way, after the bye, the dude that just won the game on Sunday night, who makes a living doing it in the MVP of the league, he does it. So you got to fix the quarterback getting out of the pocket and breaking you down. But the defense, I thought, played extremely well. Now, you need to be better in third down situations. They were pretty much they led the league last year in third downs. They were 50% on third down. Need to get them off the field. But this is a team, guys, that averaged 32 minutes of possession time over 17 games in 2024. They held the ball for 24 minutes in this game. I mean, you're talking about a defensive effort that without not getting the quarterback on the ground was outstanding. Now, your offense helped you some in possessing the football, which is that complementary football we talk about. But I know there's disappointment. You want Jalen Pierce laying, or you want Jalen Walker laying on top of the quarterback. You want James Pierce Jr. grabbing him around the scruff of the neck and ragdolling him to the ground. And it's going to come. But Pierce was around the quarterback. When you force the quarterback, this doesn't even count in the fact how many times does Baker have to get flushed out of the pocket and throw the ball away. That's part of why they only had the ball for 24 minutes. So the pressure was there. The sacks weren't, and we let him get out of the pocket some. But I thought it was a tremendous defensive effort. You made a mistake on two plays. Xavier Watts undercut a play that Baker never saw Xavier Watts, and he misplayed it. He was too shallow. Had he been a step further back, he intercepts the first pass to Ibuka for a touchdown. And then if you listen to Baker Mayfield postgame, they knew that Jesse Bates had a tendency to jump that inside route from the slot. They sent Mike Evans in there, ran that little dig, and sent Ibuka on the post in behind. Bates jumped the in route and left Fuse one-on-one on outside technique with a guy running to the middle of the field on a post. Mistake by us in the secondary. They had four plays of 15 yards or more. They had 18 in the two games combined last year. I thought there was a lot of really good stuff defensively.
What concerns you about the Vikings Sunday night?
I think that, first of all, you point to the defensive side of the football, Carl. They've got two guys on the edge that might be, you could argue, were the two best edge rushers last year. Jonathan Gernard had 12 sacks, and Andrew Van Ginkel had 11 and a half. So 23 and a half sacks between just those two players. They adjusted their interior. They were having the ball run on them some. Remember, we ran the football for about 160 yards on them in our game. They went out and got Jonathan Allen, a defensive tackle, and got Javon Hargrave as the defensive tackle to try to bolster the interior of the defense. I think their front four is pretty good. I don't think they're as physical as Tampa was with Vita Vea and Logan and those guys, Gaines and those guys in the interior. I think Atlanta will be able to come off the ball and move them some, but I think I'm concerned about those guys being able to rush the passer and not really have to blitz. You've got a defensive coordinator that has as much ingenuity probably as Todd Bowles does when it comes with pressure. Brian Flores is extremely good, so this young quarterback is going to face two of the better defensive coordinators he's going to see all year long in week 1 and 2.
And just real quick, Arch, we won't get the injury designation first thing till tomorrow. I know that Drake's got to be banged up for him to take himself out of that game. And Mooney, I know, is not yet 100%. Can the other guys do it, or can you get Bijan more involved in the passing game if need be on Sunday?
I'll be stunned if you don't see both those guys play, Mike.
Okay.
I think the other guys can make plays. I thought Casey Washington stepped up and made a couple of key catches in the game. He did a really good job of clearing stuff out. You've got to have a guy that wants to run to clear things out, to allow some of those underneath routes to happen. I thought his execution was extremely good. I think you've got enough guys to make some plays. Pitts is there. We can't discount him. But I'll be surprised if Mooney and London don't play in this game.
Great stuff. Arch, appreciate you. Looking forward to Sunday night and week two in the NFL, certainly with our Falcons and the Vikings. Thank you again.
Fellas, great talking to you.
Yeah, good stuff.
Hey, that's great to hear. I mean, again, that's Arch's spidey sense. He thinks these guys will be out there.
I hope so, man.
You get an extra full day, technically, of treatment.
It's true.
For what it's worth. And, you know, we always say, by the fifth week, nobody's 100%. Well, by the second week, Drake won't be 100%, but he's a dog.
We're going to be up there tomorrow, Flowery Branch, guys, Wednesdays, and bring you the latest. So we'll get an update on the injuries. We'll talk to Ra and a very good player guest as well. We'll tell you more about that coming up. But when we return, what's going on with Day-Day? And by the way, we'll dive back into this kicker competition now, or at least they've brought in another kicker for the Falcons who signed to the practice squad today. If you haven't heard, stay right there.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Coming up, we're going to talk Dogs at 4 o'clock because they had a big game on Saturday. Dogs preparing for Tennessee. Our buddy Connor Riley from Dog Nation is going to stop by. And we'll get the latest from him coming off of a game in which I just didn't think they played well. You were better than Austin Peay, but I thought there were so many aspects that could have been better overall, and they're going to have to do that against Tennessee on Saturday.
And we'll talk about, you're right, because you know, it's, you and I were talking about this, even said it on the promo. It's like, were they sandbagging against these teams? The rain delay was so weird. It sapped everybody. It was a lot like that Eagles-Cowboys like fourth quarter where nothing happened, really. But, yeah, you can't judge the competition. Meanwhile, the Vols are slaying the lesser competition. And, you know, they're piping up the fact that, you know, their only loss since 22 was the Dogs up in Knoxville.
Well, look, they got a had a long home win streak going until the Dogs broke that. And they need to, I say they, Josh Heupel needs to finally try to beat Kirby.
Mike, it's the reverse of the Philip Fulmer, Mark Richt we just talked about last hour with Chad talking Georgia Tech.
Yeah, that's something that I know is in the back of his mind. And maybe this team is good enough. We're going to find out, but it's always, pardon the pun, a dogfight up there in Knoxville, and it's going to be again this weekend. Connor Riley's on the way, but right now, Day-Day, man, what's going on in your world?
Oh, man, these numbers.
What are you talking about, Powerball?
What, you talking about our ratings?
No, I'm talking about...
I mean, those are good. Everybody else at the station.
Over-unders and spreads.
Oh! Okay, gotcha.
Trying to figure out what I'm going to do this
those
weekend.
Numbers.
Yeah, those numbers, man. There's some very interesting ones out there. Just got my brain kind of fluttered, that's all.
Okay.
All right, speaking of which, college football this past weekend... I thought there were some very great games over the weekend, including the Oklahoma win over Michigan, which honestly I thought was the best win of any SEC team over the weekend. Thought it was a good statement win as well for the conference because, you know, we got the whole Big Ten thinking they're, you know, big bad and all that. But for Oklahoma to go up there representing the SEC, you know, I thought that was a good win. And I think John Mateer is in my early Heisman finalist talk.
Okay.
Especially if he can have a couple of repeat performances over the next few weeks. And it's also going to be interesting to see how Michigan bounces back because Sherrone Moore is not going to be around for 2 weeks because of the suspension. So just wanted to get you all's thoughts. A, what'd you think of Oklahoma? Are they back? Is this a team that really can be in contention for an SEC title? John Mateer, you can throw him in there. And then Michigan, can they bounce back? Obviously, they got the cakewalk Central Michigan this week, but then they got Nebraska, and he won't be around to help them prepare.
Yeah, the coaches, I asked you guys this morning because we were talking a little bit about this. In regards to what games Sherrone Moore picked.
I always enjoy selective enforcement, you know? It's like, you know, you're going to have to do 25 hours of community service. We need you to pick up some trash by the roadside. Okay, how about the third weekend in November? No, that didn't work that way. But in this case, yeah, so yeah, Coach.
These guys did it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. When yeah. Remember, Harbaugh was at the motel in Happy Valley, and he took over and got the win a couple years back.
Yeah, now look, he's going to miss. Michigan, look, they're not going to say it, but they're just – obviously, they're not as good as they were, right? That's where this is. They have a young, talented quarterback. I think he's going to be really good. Was the number one recruit in the country. But for me to tell you Oklahoma's back, I'm not ready to go there. I thought it was a statement win for Brent Venables. He needed this like Brian Kelly needed the win against Clemson to start the season. But it's a long year, man. I got to see where this goes. I know they're 2-0. Who they play this week? Oh, Temple. They should be 3-0. But I need to get to the meat of their schedule before I'm ready to tell you that OU is back quite yet. But it's good for Brent Venables because he's certainly needed to get this started
again,
on the right
Carl
foot.
Just can't throw the bouquets at Oklahoma.
No, I can't.
So I will. I think you know the defense was there, and they needed the swagger in the quarterback. And I think Mateer is that guy. And I thought that, you know, he made some big plays. He ran the ball. I mean, he's physical. You know, they talked on the broadcast. He squats over 400 pounds. Okay, I mean, he's getting after it. He certainly was able to handle some of the heat. Meanwhile, with Michigan, Bryce Underwood, he's the big top dog. Don't fight with Justice Haynes on the sideline.
Yeah,
don't look
what
good.
What was that about?
I mean, whatever the beef was, I mean, you're the freshman. You're the $10 million man if he stays there for 3 or 4 years. It just looked bad.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like a little disarray. So, you know, tighten that up. He looked both like the number one guy, and he also looked like a guy that looked like the moment was too big at times.
Yeah.
Both in the same. I'm talking about Bryce Underwood.
By the way.
Coach Harbaugh. Come on, man.
Stop it, O. The meat of their schedule doesn't start until October 18th at South Carolina. Then you got Ole Miss, then at Tennessee, then at Alabama. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about whether they're back after that stretch of games.
I'll say Oklahoma is, you know. Who was it? Joe Testator. Notre Dame is back.
Back.
Or was it Texas was back?
It was Texas.
It was Tom Herman. It was Tom Herman.
They're back.
Texas is back. Eh, not really.
Yeah.
All right. Yesterday, you guys.
Not
you guys,
then.
Right. You guys touched on this. You guys touched on this yesterday. Florida's loss to USF. Obviously,
it was glorious.
Yeah, but in Napier, obviously the people, the cattle calls for his job are going to start rolling in. And I think that intensifies this week because who they got? LSU.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I bring this up is because this is also, I know there was a lot of pressure on whether Kelly could get that season opening win because he hadn't done so since taking over at LSU.
And then he beats Dabo in the soundbite.
Right, but now, right, that too. But now I think this Florida game is just as big for him in terms of getting a win to open up the conference because, like, this is a chance for him and LSU to kind of make a statement about who they are in the conference.
Can we first admit that these directional schools, however you might want to phrase it, right? Mm-hmm. Old, what used to be, you know, Division II. The competition now.
It's different.
It's different.
Transfer portal has changed everything.
And, yes. And let's acknowledge that first. I'm not making excuses for Florida. But everybody just looks at the name and they go, well, they're way better.
Right.
Slow your roll. This is why I always say, let me see. I want to see if you can compete and play at this level. The Bulls, guys, they did it in week one, and everybody said, this is the win of the season. Then they did it in week two.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Florida, you talk about must wins, I think Napier's got to gain the confidence back of Florida fans. So, this is a big one for LSU, but I think it's bigger for Napier.
Hey, man, Napier, look, he's gone. Napier's done. I'm sorry, man. You got a player. Did you not tell your players? Guys, great example from if you saw the kickoff of the NFL season, let's play with some discipline out there. Let's get after that aspect. Let's play with some discipline. No. I'm going to spit on somebody on the crucial drive, get ejected, give him 15 yards.
He apologized.
Yeah, Brandon Bett, transfer from Baylor. Dumb, stupid, inexcusable.
Shout out to Baylor.
Just like the play calling, which is inexcusable. Let's run a pass play when we got a burn clock. Napier is so got. Matter of fact, some of you know what Florida fans are saying? Who's that USF coach? What's his name? Because there's a guy doing it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, all of a sudden, you're like Alex Golish. You're like, hey, not too shabby. And by the way, Byron Brown is the quarterback who broke his leg last year. The fact they got him back, Carl, that's huge. Can't wait to see what they can do to Miami.
Well, if they do that, my point again is let's not just say, oh, Miami.
It's not.
You cannot look at these names and brands anymore and just simply think they're going to run away with it. This week was weird that way because you had all these, lesser opponents.
But USF's always been in the mix. You know, they've had ups and downs, Carl, but they were kind of like before UCF, one of the first commuter schools. That's what they're kind of referred to, what mm-hmm. Kennesaw State wants to be, mm-hmm. to get after it.
I agree. I'm just looking at the numbers. What's up with DJ Lagway, man?
He didn't let him cook. He threw one pick, and then he basically put the – in my mind, watching the game, I thought that Billy Napier put the governors on his own quarterback, who's the most – you know, the most viable weapon he's got.
And by the way, LSU is a 9-point favorite, 8.5 against Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And they don't like each other, right? Like, yeah, well, okay.
Florida's been upset they've had to play LSU for the better part of 2 decades.
Yeah. Yeah. LSU beats Florida, too. Florida might not get another win for like another month and a half, too, guys.
Guess it's Florida? Florida's the new Florida State.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
And remember, guys, this is in Death Valley. I mean, when I say Billy Napier has no chance – less than zero chance to win this game.
Yeah, it's going
to
be interesting to see.
Put your money where your mouth is.
You just wait, son.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Hey, you listen, Mr. 0-6. I'll school you on the picks.
Why you got to bring records into this, Mike? It's not important right now.
Matter of fact.
And that's not right, O. This doesn't have anything to do with records.
I might double down. I'm telling you, I like that kind of potty.
You like 8.5 with the Tigers?
You answer me.
At Death Valley? It's at home. You're a bad Florida team coming off a bad loss, going to the most difficult place to play in college football.
This is when they show up.
Yeah, who gets a win first this season, Carl or Florida?
Ooh.
Okay. Wow. You know what? You just cut me. You just cut me. All right. I'm gonna get some dubs this weekend.
Yeah.
We're talking about our pick segment. If you have no idea, these guys are already rubbing it in. It's week two. There's plenty of season left. Right. Go ahead, Day-Day.
Roll built in a day.
All right, Carl, I'm going to give you one. I think you should roll with.
Okay.
Vanderbilt and South Carolina.
I like Vandy.
Here's what I'll say about this game. I just want to get you guys' thoughts. I honestly felt like, one, Vanderbilt's win over Virginia Tech was a good power conference win for them.
They were on the ropes in that game, too.
Yeah, they very were. So the way they were able to battle back in that one, and I like Clark Lee, man. I like what he's doing with that program. But and I didn't like how South Carolina looked. Like, they didn't look all that great against South Carolina State. Mm. I feel like the passing game really isn't there the way it needs to be. And
Coach Beamer was sandbagging, please. They'll be fine.
We'll hope so. But I really like that game. That's kind of my game you're not thinking about.
Wait a
game
minute,
of the week.
Okay, so when you say you like it, who do you like?
I like Vandy.
Okay, me too.
South Carolina is -4.5 right now.
Yeah, but I like Vandy to cover that.
Look, the Pavia kid is real.
Yeah.
His moxie led them to that victory last week on the road. I mean, that place, Mike, you know, was rocking at Virginia Tech, and half the stadium was gone with like 5 minutes to play. Everybody left because they just kept putting it down their throat.
It was close, and then they blew them out.
But he led them on like 4 straight scoring drives. Yeah, the kid can play, man. But that's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, because I feel like for South Carolina without Rocket Sanders, like their run game doesn't seem to be there. As well. So I like Vandy in that one. Like I said, I like what Clark Lee has really been able to do with that team. So,
all right, South Carolina is 1-1 against the spread, and Vandy is 2-0 against the spread. So okay. Small sample size.
No, it is. Okay,
I mean, you want to write this down, Carl?
Really, Mike? We're coming back. We're going to talk dogs.
You answer me.
Because their game against Tennessee could be a defining moment for Josh Heupel. And what do the dogs have to do going into this one? This is going to be their first real test. I don't care about what happened in week one against Marshall or week two against Austin Peay. We're going to discuss it with Connor next.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.